When this all started, the discussion among veterans, Vietnam Veterans Against the War, Vets for Peace, various concerned veterans groups, we made a lot of projections and surmised a lot of the things that we thought would occur. And unfortunately, we're in a situation now where those things are coming true, and there's absolutely no salvation or satisfaction in saying I told you so, because you would hope that the sort of things you project would not be the case. And they've become the case, and it's getting increasingly worse. The headlines scream that 25% of the troops in Iraq don't have the necessary protective gear. We get a daily death count with sometimes explanations and sometimes not. We get no daily count on the wounded. I'm told anywhere between, for every American that dies, a minimum of 25 to 40 Iraqis die. We'll never know how many Iraqi people died. There's just no way to take these sort of things. The men that engineered this, the "he lied, they died" focus, these people had all the answers. They got all their answers in the most unscientific way. They created a situation, and then they went about finding the facts and the reality to plug them in. And as a consequence, they now face what is known as an asymmetrical guerrilla resistance. And asymmetrical guerrilla resistance is not necessarily a united front. It's not necessarily one or another political tendencies. It encompasses everything from groups of bandits, outlaws, political forces, potential for, a lot of people who have a lot of axes to grind against the United States, seeing them as imperialists, are taking their best shots. Naturally, the Bush administration's trying to make this sound like it's outside agitators. One of the more common things that we heard in the 60s and 70s, it was always outside agitators. The people who are there couldn't have been a part of this, but we know and we see daily in mainstream media reports the frustrations of the Iraqi people. U.S. military today is, by and large, I've given these facts and figures before, and a lot of people here are probably familiar with them, that a large portion of our military, almost 70%, comes from the South, and other poor and working class backgrounds. It's very ethnically diverse. There's some indication now from the Latino community that they think that there are higher casualties being taken by Latinos as a group out of proportion to their actual participation. I don't have the facts and figures before me on that, but it's being looked into. Today's military is up. Very large and diverse sort of thing. Most recently, the reserves have put all their troops, 205,000 Army reservists, on a war footing, which means that all those reservists can be called into use regardless of what they're trained to do. What we're seeing, a huge amount of reserve and National Guard troops being put into infantry situations where they have no experience, no training. The experienced troops, we just want them out of there. That's the worst kind of experience. However, when you look at inserting reserve and National Guard units in their place, it will be like feeding young people into a meat grinder. They're talking about tours up to 12 months for 15 months or longer for reservists on a rotational basis. And the same burden is being put on the regular active duty troops. The 1.4 members, active duty members of the military, is up to about the 1.1 million National Guard and Reserve troops. These troops, they're what, currently 128,568 Army Guard and Army Reserve troops on active duty in the United States and overseas, including 60,000 from the Army Reserve, and which comprise an entire third of the Army Reserve. There's a good deal of concern about retention, and they're trying to be what they say is very candid with the troops about what they must face. 45,000 regular Army troops have had to do back-to-back tours overseas in Iraq, Korea, and Afghanistan. And their recruiting goals of 62,000 for this coming year is stated to be down about 7,000 to date. You're hearing that they're meeting their enlistment quotas, and to a degree this may be true. They can artificially create these quotas and raise them up and down. But one of the more common things that this conflict and every conflict that the United States has ever been involved with, you will find that while they're recruiting plenty of new fresh cannon fodder for the war machine, there are a good number of cadre, NCO cadre, and young officers going out the back door who, having experienced this, will never want to spend their lives doing it again. And as a result, the quality of the experience and the training, and even people who could possibly save some of these young lives, for obvious reasons, are no longer willing to sacrifice theirs. As of September 2nd, 6,000 people had been taken out of Iraq. That accounted for like approximately 1,124 wounded in action, and 301 of which received non-hostile injuries, and thousands who have become physically and mentally ill. To date, we know of 11 or 12 suicides among Army forces, and at least 3 suicides among Marines. These things are not being reported. An average coming into Germany, an average of 40 to 44 patients a day from Iraq, and that's up to 10 to 12% of most of them are being classified as battle injuries. I've made the point over the years that the military is probably the most dangerous job in the world. That danger on a daily basis becomes much more intensified in combat situations. A lot of the equipment that they have is outdated. The supplies, as we know, and even the mail doesn't get to them on a regular basis. Rumsfeld designed this great plan where he, instead of U.S. military forces to take care of a lot of these things, including cooking their own food and delivering the mail, he outsourced it to civilian jobs. Well, after one or two of the civilian employees are killed, they refuse to do their jobs anymore. And they can be sent home, but they can't be intimidated like an active duty military person can. You can see their point as well. My guess is none of them are union, and very few of them have any real commitment to what's actually going on there. Three to six people a day coming out of Iraq, that on an average, three to six are dying, and another 40, as we said, were wounded. U.S. troops on an average across Iraq are facing 15 to 20 attacks a day. And up to, as of May 1st, which is a considerable amount of time ago, of course, 90 American soldiers have been killed by hostile fire in Iraq after George Bush made his bold statement that the war was over and that if you want to fight us, come and get us. And by God, they did come after our kids. And all of his bravado and all of his bullshit will not put a lid on the fact that the United States is facing a situation that it was not prepared to face. They put all these young American men and women, their lives in jeopardy without a very much consideration and certainly very poor planning. And the jobs that they gave them and the things that they've been trained to do, in many cases in a war footing situation, is not what they will be doing once they arrive there. And they're pouring more and more people into the infantry role of young people that weren't trained for it. I remember the mother speaking at at a union meeting in this very building, the mother had expressed a concern, and also speaking to Danny Davis about her daughter, who they had driving a 12-by, which is one of the large military transport trucks, and she wasn't large enough to reach the pedals, and that's the job that she'd been given. And when I hear about Jessica Lynch, she is, that young woman also pops into my mind almost automatically. It goes to say, from what we're hearing from active duty GIs and people who are returning, that they're being given the opportunity to go to the post-traumatic stress disorder classes that the military's having. I don't know how effective they're going to be, because a lot of the people returning, I won't say most, don't trust them. And to have effective post-traumatic stress disorder counseling, I'm speaking from personal experience, you have to be able to trust the people who are administering the program and trust your peer group. And in a lot of cases, that trust isn't there. Once again, the military proceeds from the least scientific sort of progression on it. They're going to solve a problem that they really can't recognize and are unwilling to acknowledge in many cases actually exists. So they're flailing about, just like the Bush administration is, trying to find some bogus facts and information to fit their ideological program. Thanks.